God cop? Crime just got a new worst friend.
The hell is that?
A show I am very excited about. A New York City detective solves crimes with the help of his new partner, God.
So God just tells him who did it?
God can't just tell him who did it.
Why not?
Watch the pilot, Lemon. It's all explained in the end by the wise black man played by Karl Malone.
TBTL.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's Friday. Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend.
It's really not that hard, okay? We're taping it now, and it airs next week, okay? So, if you're watching me talk about the elderly, don't call to talk about it. It's too late. Instead, call about cooking, which is next week's topic.
What's your name?
My name? Oh, let me tell you my name. I'm confused. I'm confused because I never went to school.
My name is Lieutenant Columbo, homicide.
I was listening to your program on my car radio.
Oh, what do you think so far?
I'm a fan of yours. A really big fan.
Well, good morning and welcome to a Friday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Podcasts are the future of show business.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
What a fun, sexy time for you.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. We have arrived, everyone, at episode 2,893 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
And we got a fun thing happening on this Friday. We've got a Friday friendo stopping by.
Call it friendo.
Our friend, Mr. Hari Kondabolu, comedian extraordinaire, who sent a tweet out this week that I saw. I interpreted it essentially as a cry for help. So we're going to call him up later on in the show and see if we can provide him with said help. Also, because it's a Friday, we've got some music for your weekend, so we will get you all set up for what we hope is a beautiful weekend wherever you are in the world listening to this. It's supposed to be pretty nice in the Northwest. Before we can get started with anything, though, we've got to say hello to the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He might have tacos for dinner tonight. He's not quite sure about it yet. He's back at it again with the white Vans. He is Andrew.
Ziggle zagget. Let's get back at it.
Walsh, and he is about to get back at it. Hello, my friend.
Hey, Luke. I have something to tell you that sort of delights me, but I think is going to annoy you a little bit, maybe.
Okay.
Can our relationship right. handle this?
I mean, I'll only be able to tell you after you tell me what you're about to tell me.
I just realized, so you and I are doing this show now. We've recorded some other things this morning. I am now just realizing I haven't had my computer plugged in via Ethernet this entire time. This has all been brought to us via the power of Wi-Fi, which is a big no-no when you and I dial up our computers together because it causes all kinds of dropouts and everything. But the state of the internet is strong, my friend. Have I been breaking up as I talk to you? Can you hear me okay?
This is really weird because, again, we're per usual, starting this in the most technical, least accessible part of the realm for our listeners. But not only are we talking down the line where usually we have our computers connected via an Ethernet cable, but we're also running Skype. So I can actually see you, which is rare, because when we talk to Hari, we want to have you and I want to have eye contact so that we can take this show to an intimacy level that we heretofore haven't. No, it's so because when we have a guest on the phone and you and I are in different cities, Andrew, it can be a little complicated. So we have Skype set up for that purpose, meaning not only have we been talking down the line with you on the Wi-Fi, but we've also been Skyping down the line with you on the Wi-Fi, and everything seems to be working out okay. By the way, you were right. I am annoyed with you.
because I forgot to do it. But
now I'm stressed out.
Now you're stressed out like it's going to go down. But it hasn't been plugged in at all this morning, and you and I have been doing a lot of stuff before the show. So I'm feeling pretty good.
I can't believe you're trying to make that joke.
What do you mean trying to make that joke?
You know what it's like, Andrew? This is, well, I'll be the judge of that, if it was made or attempted. But this is like when you're learning how to ride a bike, and maybe if, like, your parent helps you or your dad helps you. I remember my dad running next to, like, holding onto the back of my bike, which, as I've mentioned on the show before, I believe was and maybe things aren't this gendered anymore, but in my day, there was girls' bike and boys' bike.
Mm-hmm.
And I inherited a girls' bike, and it was pink, and it had the lower bar, which, let's be honest, that should be the boys' bike. I mean, not that
or everybody's
women
bike.
Want it. Yeah, right? There you go. It's like nobody wants to have their crotch smashed by the bar of the bike. The idea that the boys' it was, you knew it was a boys' bike because the chances of just wrecking your testicles were, like, higher. I don't understand how that got decided. But anyway, I had what at the time was considered a girl's bike, which my dad had helpfully re-outfitted with, like, a new seat, new handlebars, new pads. Everything around the frame of the bike was more traditionally reading boy than girl. Again, this is 1983 or something. But I remember when I finally was learning how to ride it, him running next to me and holding the back of the seat, kind of stabilizing the bike. And then at some point, I'm pedaling, and I look back and I realize, oh my gosh, he's way behind me. I'm just doing this without my dad holding me up. That's you and me realizing you've been on Wi-Fi the whole time.
I know. And I hope that your analogy is apt and it's not like Wile E. Coyote, who suddenly realizes there's no ground beneath him anymore and everything comes crashing down.
That's the other thing that can happen. Well, so far, so good. That's the good news. You're going to be going to Oakland this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
What gives?
Oh, I'm going to see my dumb brother-in-law. No, I wanted to say it that way because he listens to the show, and I wanted to say something really mean. Hi, Zachary.
I also call that an attempted joke because if you really wanted to do, and I'm not capable of this, Andrew, don't get me wrong, but if you were really committed to that joke, you would have just left.
You just let it ride. That would have been a
dumb
weird
dumb brother-in-law.
Well, that
and then just like waited till you got to Oakland to see this kind of look on his face, like, what did I do?
The funny thing is, I don't think he would, like, given the nature of it, he probably wouldn't even hear it until I'm, like, back. So we could have gone and have, like, a really nice weekend together. And then, like, he's listening to Friday show on Monday, like, what? But also, I think that it would, I don't know, me just saying that and leaving it sit there wouldn't just potentially damage my relationship with my brother-in-law, but also the listeners. The listeners would be like, wow, that's like horrible way to talk about your family member. No, I love Zach. And so Genevieve's parents are also
visiting.
Are you going
to get to see Zach's lovely, wonderful dog, who does listen to the show every day and is completely caught up?
No, the dog I hate. Mm-hmm. No, beautiful little dog. I will be seeing the dog and also Genevieve's parents, who are visiting from the East Coast. So it's going to be like a little family reunion in the Bay Area where Zach lives. And I've never been there before. Can you believe it? I have literally, I mean, I passed through in the middle of the night as we were driving from Los Angeles to Seattle when we moved back up here. And it was in the middle of a huge storm, I believe. But yeah, I've never spent
any time
there.
I thought you meant you'd never been to Oakland, but you've never even been to the Bay Area.
Never. Never. And it seems like a place that I would really, I mean, I know it's changed a lot, obviously, in the past 20 years. And it's not the, I know it has a lot of issues as far as affordability and stuff. I don't know if a lot of the magic
is gone.
Would
you say Oakland is dying or trying?
I would say that Oakland is frying.
Heyo. You know what? When you say that joke, I laugh. Why, Andrew?
Because it was yours.
I'm a good coworker.
But anyway, I am looking forward to it. So it'll be a quick little trip. You know, I'm not going to miss any shows. I'll be back on Monday for our show. But yeah, so just a weekend jaunt down to the Bay Area. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Do you know if you guys are going to be mostly in Oakland, or are you going to go over to San Francisco, or, like, do you have – because I'm full of I'm sure Zach knows what's up. He lives there now, but I'm full of unsolicited advice about doing things in the Yay-scaria.
All right.
That's how I let everyone know that I'm really down with the Bay. I call it the Yay-scaria.
Quick question. Is that joke trying or dying? Sorry. I'm glad you have
is
Skype
the show
on me.
Over
you
can see, or canceled?
Am I fired or forced to resign? I'm looking for an email now because this would be very relevant to your interests. I think we're mostly, Vives and I are staying in Oakland. I believe that's where Zach lives. I think her folks are staying in San Francisco, so I believe there will be a lot of crossing of the bridge. I think it's a bridge.
They have bridges there.
Okay, good. Do they have bridges? I haven't heard whether or not there are bridges in that area, in that part of the country. But Genevieve mentioned today, and I'm a little embarrassed because I can't find the email here. And again, I know Zach will hear this. Apparently, we might be going to a minor league ball game tonight, Friday night.
Fun.
Yeah, but I don't know what the team would be. Do you?
Off the top of my head, no, because it's probably got to be in the greater Bay Area, because Oakland has a team, obviously, as does San Francisco. So presumably, the minor league team is, you know, somewhere out in the sort of like, it's like the Pleasantville Platypuses or something. Is it Platypi? Right. Is that one of those ones that when you get
probably
the Pleasanton probablys? maybe that's the team.
Could it be the San Jose Giants? It looks like it might be the San Jose Giants, a local minor team.
Okay. The San Jose Unsustainable Rent Prices.
It should be the San Jose Scooters. San Jose Sidewalk Scooters.
Well, Carrie and I were in San Francisco many years ago, and by many, I mean maybe two or something, and we did this thing that was so fun. I can't recommend it enough, because Carrie has always wanted to get a VW Beetle.
Oh, yeah?
A car, like a, you know, 1960s VW Beetle. It's kind of always been her dream car. And there's a service there in San Francisco where you can rent one, a convertible. And you rent it for the afternoon, and we did. And it's a – I don't know how many gears there are, if it's a 4-speed or 5-speed, but, you know, it's a stick shift. And we cruised around, crossed some of those famous bridges. And what's actually really cool – normally I wouldn't like this kind of thing, but it's actually very helpful. They've mounted a number of GoPros strategically. So you have video of yourself driving this really fun car with the top down over the Golden Gate Bridge or whatever. Or we went over to Marin and had lunch and just went all up and down, like, you know, those crazy, you know, Knob Hill and Russian Hill and stuff. It was super duper fun. I highly recommend if you're looking for something to do. The other thing is, if you're in San Francisco and it's like, you know, nighttime and you and Vives and the fam want to get a drink or something, the Tonga Room, which is underneath the Fairmont. The Tonga Room, which I'm sure talked about on the show a lot of times, it's a tiki-themed kind of restaurant bar. The food is awful, so don't, like, plan on eating there, or certainly don't make it your one place you're going to get food. But the band plays – there's, like, a band playing Friday and Saturday nights and probably other nights. They play on this little boat that floats out into the middle of a pool in the giant restaurant in the basement of this hotel. And then a fake storm goes off. It starts raining on the lake – that the band is playing on it, and the band is playing, you know, just like basically Cool in the Gang or some kind of party rock. Anyway, the Tonga Room is – I'm sure there are cooler bars in San Francisco, but it's a very fun bar.
When you were driving around the convertible Beetle around the Bay Area, was this song playing, by the way? Oh, this isn't going to pay off, is it?
Oh, I already I know this song by – all I need is the opening notes. Do 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 do.
There she goes. There she goes again.
So this is not
Carrie
the-
would do this thing. Carrie would like lean out the side and just like let her arms fly through the air. At one point, she morphed into Drew Barrymore. It was intense.
This is very everything you described sounded very So I Married an Ex-Murderer, which is why I'm playing this version of the song, not the original.
Yes. This is The Laws, right?
The Laws originally did it. This is the Boo Radleys did it for the movie.
Oh, okay. Because I do know there's also a Ned's Atomic Dustbin track.
Oh, yeah?
On this soundtrack.
Oh, okay. They didn't do a third version of the song. I see.
No, but on the So I Married an Axe Murderer soundtrack, which I bought from Columbia House. And by bought, I mean got for a penny.
Dude, I didn't have the soundtrack, but I loved that movie so much. I mean, there was definitely a time where that was my favorite movie.
Think about it. You're like a teenager or young person living in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And like, it's coming, I mean, come on. It's like San Francisco. It's the music is so sort of perfect. It's you know, Mike Myers, who's funny. It's Nancy. How can I forget
Travis,
her last name?
His I believe
Nancy Travis.
Who obviously I just
remembering
fell
things.
In love with. You know,
how could you not?
Yeah.
Just like, wasn't she also in Three Men and a Baby? I think she was the mom in the Three Men and a Baby movies.
Do you know that my dad did not let us watch Three Men or didn't like us watching Three Men and a Baby? I never saw it because it, like, I think it portrayed loose morals. People not taking responsibility for their offspring.
You know what's funny is that it's so the opposite. It's basically a bunch of guys, or at least two guys. I forget the exact plot, but it's a number of guys taking responsibility for a baby that's not even theirs.
I know,
which is actually, I think, kind of.
But I think that, and again,
they were not married.
I think this is problematic thinking. But yeah, I think it was out of wedlock. And also the fact that you wouldn't know who the dad is. I don't think that was something my dad wanted, like, us kids to be. Like, that's not a reality that he wanted for us.
Sure.
And also,
it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
And Bill and Joe and Carl. I don't know who's. I don't know the names of the guys in that movie.
How did you pick? They were all coal miners. The film is set in Pittsburgh.
Otis
and it's about three
and
coal
Murray.
Miners. Okay, Andrew, my gall darn mind has now been blown for the second time this episode. Time number one, when I found out that we're on Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
Time number two, when I looked at Three Men and a Baby, which Nancy Travis is in.
Oh, okay.
Starring Tom Selleck, Steve Guttenberg, Ted Danson. By the way, this is a movie that I went and saw in a theater on my own dime. I would also not have been allowed to see Three Men and a Baby. Mm-hmm. My parents' worldview, much less coherent, I would say, than Bob Walsh's. Like, I don't think they even – it was just a blanket policy. No movies, you know, like that no movies that were made after 1981 was pretty much the rule. So, like, but me being sketchy even as a young person, I just was like, well, that just means I have to go to Oak Tree Cinemas to see my films. And so I remember seeing this in the theater. Don't look this up. And I will be shocked if you get this. But I am blown away at who directed Three Men and a Baby, the movie Three Men and a Baby.
Do you know, I actually have a guess at this. Is it was it Nora Ephron?
No, and that would have actually made a lot of sense because, you know, Nora Ephron was writing lots of comedies and books and things at this time. And but no, she did not direct it, nor did she write it. The director of the movie Three Men and a Baby is who we're looking for right now.
Okay, so you want me to go again?
Yes.
I just listed the only director I know. Okay. Was it David Lynch? Let's just go
Vin
through
Diesel. Them.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Something I meant to tell you that I'm really excited about. Okay, I know it wasn't Hal Hartley who directed this movie, but Hal Hartley started following me on Twitter last week. I was dancing around the living room telling Genevieve, like, what should I tweet at Hal Hartley? Or how do I start? Okay, now here's the deal.
Did you tweet a Hal Hartley reference?
I did. And I got to say, there are some caveats here. And there is a chance that maybe, you know, I didn't fully investigate this. I could be getting kind of pranked here. I don't think it's a prank, but let me see if I can find this.
Nobody
but essentially,
has the time to create a fake Hal Hartley account. No offense.
It's actually the account that started following me is the name of his independent film studio. And it's like,
okay, which is called what?
I'm looking for this now. Actually, maybe I should not be looking through my mentions and just look up Hal Hartley Twitter. This will answer some things too. I had made a joke. Okay, it's at Possible Films is the actual handle, and it's listed as halhartley.com as the name, and the description is Possible Films is a small company run by me, Hal Hartley. I write, direct, and produce films, and then I try to market them, which is a very humble little bio there on Twitter. And what happened was I had – give me a second to work this out. I had taken a photo on the airplane of my movie options. There were a lot of movies I could watch for free on the airplane back from St. Paul last week. I decided to look at the category of – classics and indie movies, which they group together. I'm like, that's interesting. So I click on it, and the options are four different Bourne movies and the movie Coco by Disney. And I was like, are any of these considered either classic or independent films? And a buddy of ours, the Deadbeat Film Society, Kevin from the Deadbeat Film Society, tweeted back at me, oh, yes, of course, Matt Damon, famous indie actor. And I wrote back, yes, I think I know him from some of those Hal Hartley films. Couple of days later, halhartley.com/possiblefilms starts following me. And he's following about 1,600 people, getting close to 1,700 people. So, you know, he's following a lot of people, but it's not like he's just like following every single person. Well, maybe it's every single person who's mentioned.
Well, no, it's not like Taye Diggs. Do you know that about Taye Diggs?
Also followed me.
I didn't have the
point,
heart to tell somebody the other day that Taye Diggs following them was not really like as exciting as like, I mean, there's no reason to rain on someone's parade, but somebody was like, oh yeah, Taye Diggs started following me, and I felt like saying, I think that's maybe a bot or some follow back thing.
He's still doing that, by the way. That was something he did like, because I remember I got the Taye Diggs follow, and I didn't even know who it was, but I knew he was famous, and I was at KCRW. I'm like, Taye Diggs started following me, and I think my colleague Jolie was just like, yeah, you just want to calm down about that right about now.
But I don't even think it can't even be Taye Diggs. It's probably just some computer program, right, that just follows anyone. Like, you think Taye Diggs is himself, the actor, is like hitting follow on just like random people to the tune of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people?
Maybe he set something up. It was my understanding that he was just like, he wanted to follow everybody. Oh, here's an interview. This is from the WashingtonPost.com from 2014. Taye Diggs finally explains why he follows thousands of random, and now the page won't load. Maybe because I'm really stress testing the Wi-Fi here. Why he follows thousands
Andrew,
of random people
I
on Twitter.
I swear to if you...
and, I can't believe
I can't even do a good fake...
I can't believe you attempted that joke. What did you say to me before?
It was terrible. That was not even an attempt. I bailed on that joke. So what's Taye Diggs
finally
have to say about
we have an
following?
Answer. Diggs spilled the truth to Matt Lauer on NBC's Today Show Friday morning while promoting his new drama, Murder in the First. The gist is this. Diggs hired a social network dude, quote-unquote social network dude, to do it for him. And then he extended his answer. It's exactly what you'd think it would be for a celebrity being pressured into social media when he really doesn't care about anything on Twitter except for basketball. So it sounds like he was kind of forced to do this because it was 2014 and – or probably 2012
or whatever.
Yeah,
everybody was like –
you
got to
get
on that Twitter.
And then so he said, fine, I'll hire somebody to do it. And then it looks like he just said, just follow everybody.
I'm still, my guess is still, because like I got followed by them. I can't think of a universe in which my name would have crossed the transom of whoever's handling Taye Diggs' Twitter account circa 2015 or 14. That makes me think it's got to be a computer program that just follows some kind of algorithm and starts following.
Yeah, maybe.
But back to Hal Hartley, who is not a Taye Diggs and is not an algorithm, we should have him on the show.
Yeah, that would be really great. And I can rat out Jordan Peele for stealing his idea for adults playing children's
Peele on. So everybody wins. I'm looking at a Kickstarter that Hal Hartley was doing for his next movie called Surviving Desire. And I guess it's to restore the movie Surviving
Desire.
Okay,
I was going to say, yeah, because that's one of his classics, I think, which I've never seen.
Yeah, and he was looking to raise – they were looking to raise $60,000 to I guess, put out a box set or remastered in some fashion, and they raised $66,000.
Mm, wow.
So they hit their goal, so that'll be happening. So, it's very clear that my knowledge of the Hal Hartley oeuvre is fairly limited, but – I mean, I think it would be cool to have him on. You talk about him a lot on the show. I know you're a fan. What do you say?
Yeah. What I'll do is I'll
slide into his DMs, which you can actually do since he follows you.
Yeah, that's really neato. Anyway, so who directed Three Men and a Baby is the question. We know it's not Hal Hartley. I assume it's not David Lynch. Could it be the Star Wars guy, Lucas?
Chewie? No.
Was it George Lucas?
It is, Andrew. Leonard Nimoy.
Whoa. Cannot travel through the vacuum of space.
Whoa, I would have never guessed. I didn't know that Leonard Nimoy directed films.
I didn't either. And like madcap romps at that. I believe Three Men and a Baby was a remake of a French film. I'm actually not even joking when I say that. But Leonard Nimoy, or as I hear people say sometimes, Leonard Nimoy. I'm not totally sure on that. I'm so that wasn't me trying to pretend like the lines.
I know. I really did wonder
awkwardly in between my words. Although coincidentally or ironically, that was the best fake breakup that I've done on the show unintentionally. No, but like I don't like. I could see a world in which it's technically Leonard Nimoy, but. You know, he just kind of got tired of correcting people. I'm sure we have some trackies out there, Star Trek fans who, correct me.
Can I list, it's only 12 films, can I list all of the films that he has directed? Actually, they're not even
Leonard
all.
Leonard Nimoy?
Yeah, they're not even all films. Okay, so he directed an episode of Night Gallery in 1973. That was mm-hmm. a TV show. I don't know it. His episode is called Death on a Barge. He also did a TV movie called Vincent. That was a TV movie. The Powers of Matthew Starr was a TV series. He directed an episode called The Triangle. I'm getting into some things here. Now, this is interesting. 1983, he directed an episode of T.J. Hooker. Who was in T.J. Hooker?
Ah. William Shatner.
Now he does two Star Trek movies, Star Trek III and Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, which I loved as a kid. And that makes sense. That was
the one with the whales.
That's one with the whales. And Spock is really like he stole the show with his like humor in that one. I remember his dry humor. And I think he gives somebody the Vulcan death grip or something. I assume he didn't kill him, but somebody was playing their beatbox too loud on the bus. Also, that's the one where Spock doesn't know how to swear, and he keeps swearing wrong. Three Men and a Baby, 1987. The Good Mother, 1988. Body Wars, a short. I think that's probably based on his photography of plus-sized women, which was a big kind of thing that he was active around. Funny About Love in 1990. Holy Matrimony in 1994. Wow. And
did you look at Funny About Love?
No. What's up with that?
When Duffy Bergman, a New York City cartoonist, meets Meg Lloyd, a gourmet chef, he discovers the love of his life, and they marry. Yet love alone isn't enough to make them happy. Starring Gene Wilder and a baby who's sitting on his head in the publicity photo.
Oh, this is the exact kind of movie when it's like a Friday night and Vives and I are staying home. We just want to find a dumb-ass movie from the 90s. This is the exact kind of movie we're looking for. I need to write this down.
I promise you this movie, which I'm only becoming aware existed as of right now, it's got to be about pressure being put on Gene Wilder to have a baby, right?
It's got to be.
I got to give credit to the movie poster because, again, it's a baby holding an alarm clock sitting on Gene Wilder's head, and Gene Wilder looks like, I don't know about this. Is that a biological clock reference?
Will our internet withstand?
Oh, my God. This is like a stressful game of Jenga.
I love it.
I don't know if you could – can we put one more peg on top of this already teetering tower?
We're going to try. This is the trailer for Funny About Love.
Okay.
Meet Duffy Bergman. He's a man's man.
Oh, Gene Wilder. Classic man's man.
He's a ladies' man.
What you saw – so that was some ironic juxtaposition. When they say man's man, he's in the gym trying desperately to do a bench press, which he cannot do.
At least they're letting Gene Wilder be Gene Wilder. I thought that he was supposed to be some sort of Rico Suave.
No, I should have mentioned that. I forgot that. You guys can't all see me right now.
He's a ladies' man. He's a lucky man.
Could you please tell me who the Bulgarian bear wrestler is who made this?
I'm the Bulgarian bear wrestler.
He's at a party. He's complaining, I believe, about the hors d'oeuvres. And he says, can you tell me who the Bulgarian wrestler is who made this? Which is a weird insult to a chef.
Bulgarian bear wrestler.
Bear wrestler. And then we see an attractive woman who is clearly catering the event. And he realizes that he has stepped in it.
Wrestler is who made this.
I'm the Bulgarian bear wrestler.
This is delicious. If you don't love me, then just tell me you don't love me and I'll get out of the way.
Get out of the way!
He's a man whose biological clock...
I want one of those.
...is about to go off.
It looks like he is now... We've jumped ahead in time. I'm sorry about this. He is now married the beautiful Bulgarian bear wrestler. And now he's the one, it looks like, who wants the baby.
And whose biological clock...
I want one of those.
...is about to go off.
26 million couples a year have difficulty conceiving.
Oh, what's happening here?
It's an auditory monitor.
Oh, I thought maybe you were lonely.
He's getting a personal exam in the exam room.
Temperature. This should do the trick.
What's this little pocket for?
So this is about his guy's not working. That's what this is all about. Him trying to, like, there. He's now trying on a special pair of underwear that will keep certain areas, cool.
Nice.
Sometimes it takes more than a fertile imagination to go from here to paternity.
Come on. Worst thing that can happen, we'll have 2 hours of incredible, unreproductive sex. Work, work, work.
Gene Wilder, funny about love.
Okay, I think we got it. I would watch that movie.
You know what? I'm going to say... The trailer intrigued me. I liked it. It was not what I thought it was. It was his biological clock ticking. That's more fun, and a little bit slightly less cliche, I guess. What I'm interested now in is the movie was written. It said by Bob Green, and then parenthetically it said article, which made me think some guy named Bob Green wrote an article about his reproductive issues, and then somebody took that article and then expanded it into a screenplay, which ultimately starred Gene Wilder and was directed by one Leonard Nimoy.
Huh. No kidding. Now, I was going to say, should we name today's episode From Here to Paternity? I enjoyed that pun, but I would say two things about that. Number one, I worry already people will see that title and think that one of us have a big announcement. And number two, there was an ER episode called From Here to Paternity, and you know me, I'm not a hack.
How about Bulgarian bear wrestling?
That sounds like good. Yeah.
The film was panned by critics. Based on 7 reviews, the film has a 0% rating on review aggregator Rotten Tomatoes. Janet Maslin of the New York Times said, infertility, divorce, and loneliness shape the rambling plot. But that sounds like a typical episode of TBTL. Mm-hmm. But they somehow do little to make the film substantial. Once the film settles down to follow Duffy and Meg in their eager efforts to conceive a baby, it develops at least some recognizable emotional content. Roger Ebert had nothing but disdain for the film, giving it only a half of a star out of 4. Funny About Love provides an opportunity to spend 101 minutes in the presence of the most cloying, inane, and annoying dialogue I've heard in many a moon, punctuated only by occasional lapses into startlingly bad manners.
Wow. How about we call today's show The Beautiful Bulgarian Bear Wrestlers of Baseball? Isn't that a documentary that you love?
Yes, it is. I love it. Made by Kurt Russell's kids.
Yeah.
The cast of this movie includes Andrew, of course Gene Wilder, of course Christine Lottie, of course Mary Stuart Masterson.
Oh.
I know that you wouldn't have known any of those other than Gene Wilder. But also our friend Stephen Tobolowsky.
Uh-huh.
I wish she were our friend, Wendy Malick of many productions.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, Regis Philbin as himself. Regis Philbin, one of the top 10 most famous Albanian Americans. And then, last but not least, a command performance by one Patrick Ewing playing himself.
Whoa.
In Funny About Love.
Wow, that is a very, I'm going to say, diverse cast, not necessarily racially. Although Patrick Ewing, I assume, is an African American. I don't know much about basketball, but they're pulling from a lot of different fields, I feel like.
The movie did $8.1 million at the box office, which, to be honest with you, I can't imagine it cost $8.1 million to make. I mean, obviously, it was a lot of money to get a baby that's able to hold an alarm clock on Gene Wilder's head.
That alone.
So that's probably a cool mill of your budget.
Sure.
But other than that, I wonder if it – I mean, $8.1 million is not terrible. I wonder if it recouped. Well, and – did any of us think this was going to get talked about this much on today's episode of TBTL?
Well, I'll tell you what. When I rent it for $2.99 on Amazon Prime or whatever this weekend, I guess not this weekend. I don't know if Genevieve's family would be into this as much, but we'll save this,
hey
this
guys,
for next weekend.
Forget the V-Dub tour. Forget the trip to Marin or the Presidio. Forget the Tonga Room. We're staying home and watching one of a lesser Gene Wilder film. Hey, speaking of, I know you're not going to go to this. I already know that these recommendations are falling on deaf ears. But one other place in San Francisco that Carrie and I have been to that I just absolutely loved, I believe it's called Foreign Cinema. And what it is a restaurant. The food is great. They're also showing a movie on the back wall of the restaurant. And it's not like it's when I describe it that way, it sounds like kind of shticky or like it's a drive-in movie. Just imagine a really delicious restaurant that you are enjoying being at in a very cool locale in San Francisco. But then also a film is playing, and if you care to watch it, and it's in another language, you have a little thing at your table, a little speaker you can turn up and listen to the movie while you're having dinner, or you can also turn it down and skip it altogether. Foreign Cinema, highly recommend.
I like it. That actually sounds right up my alley. I think this weekend, though, I am going to let go and let the hazes. You know, I'm going to be riding shotgun on the adventures this weekend. I won't be driving the agenda.
Has us take the wheel?
That's right. That's not a bad show title either, yeah.
No, we have definitely put worse up, like, recently. Okay, let me actually get a special audio accompaniment together.
On your mark.
Get set.
Get set.
Now ready.
Ready.
Go.
Everybody rattle,
dazzle. Everybody.
We got some dazzling donors to thank before we head into this little break. And they include, these of course, generous donors who are dazzling us with their donation. Candy Brewster of Port Murray, New Jersey. Are we going to Port Murray, New Jersey on our Australia trip? That sounds, if you leave out the New Jersey, that definitely sounds like a place we're going. Port Murray.
I believe it's the crossroads of New Jersey.
New Jersey. Candy says, at first I was going to let this slide by and not say anything, for that seems so boring. But that's such a difference between for and but there. She's saying it would seem boring to her, Candy Brewster of Port Murray, New Jersey, to not say anything. So she says, I am a pretty private person. I'm not into self-promotion. I also feel the pressure to be clever and original with such an amazing group of fellow listeners weighing in. And there is not much territory that hasn't been covered. The end. Well, thank you so much, Candy. Really appreciate it.
Rest of the email,
that's where the email
off.
Cuts off, yeah. So I just assume that's kind of it. Having said that, Candy writes, I do want to say that rarely does a weekday pass without me listening. I spend a lot of solitary time in the car for my job, and TBTL makes my commuting as enjoyable as it could possibly be. I feel the welcome of not only Andrew and Luke, but a whole group of fellow tens that I only connect with, for the most part, in my mind. Suffice it to say that we all go through lots of personal bleep in the course of the years listening. And it's comforting to have some imaginary friends from the imaginary radio. I truly feel that I've shared many a tear and many a laugh with all of you. I often refer to my friends in the Northwest when I am relaying an anecdote from the show. By the way, Candy, 100% approve that. And we'll back you on that story. If people want to call us for reference, like, yeah, Candy says she has friends in the Northwest, and you were recently talking about the Gene Wilder movie, Funny Thing About Love. We will absolutely back that story that we're your friends in the Northwest. Just give them our number. It's 206-414-TBTL. Wait, that is actually going to kind of ruin the bit. The lie, really, if you're being honest. Anyway, we are your imaginary friends, Candy. I'll tell you that. She says, so thank you for keeping the show real. My world views on sausage, balding, filet mignon, puttering, airline travel, a garbage pickup, and boating have forever been altered. And that's fine. Oh, and also the music. It's amazing.
Oh.
That's from
nice.
Listener Candy in Port Murray, New Jersey. Candy, thank you so much.
Quick question on that. Have we sausage balding, filet mignon, a putter, garbage pickup? I don't feel like we've talked much about garbage pickup on this show, but maybe I just before my time? Was Jen obsessed with it or something?
Candy's, you know what? She's doing a lot of this from memory. She's confusing us with another podcast, but she's donating money, so it's not
okay.
Let's not quibble.
It seems a little weird to spend a lot of time on a podcast talking about garbage pickup, so that's why it stood out to me.
Yeah, we've also got to thank Matthew Lang of Seattle, Washington. Matthew says, hello, dummies. It's hard to believe it's been another year. Boy, you're telling us, Matthew. I've been listening from the beginning, as in the 710 Cairo days. some people may not even know. I mean, they know we started as a radio show. We started as an AM radio show.
The frequency switched over while your show existed, right? You went from AM to FM?
Yeah, there are AM frequencies in Minnesota that are so worthless that they're turning them into parking lots.
That's
and
true.
Reanimating them in haberdasheries.
Yes.
Like, I mean, AM radio, that's wild. Yes, we started on 710 AM. I distinctly remember that I was living in Bellevue, making a bed for myself and finishing a coffee table I had started a few years prior. I listened to Cairo while doing it. One night, you and Jen filled my ear holes, and I thought, what a crazy show Cairo put on. I loved it immediately. God, Matthew, that says a lot about you. I don't think I would have liked TBTL as a listener immediately. I would have been like, I think my ear would have gone to all the things that were not great about it, but I love that you loved it immediately. Since we grew up in the same area and time, all of your loves, hates, cultural references were and are so closely lined up together. I've loved every iteration of the show through the years, and thank you so much for getting me through so much. Peace and love. Now, oh yeah, Matthew does the haiku. Mm-hmm. I remember this. Now, for my yearly haiku, I know the folks at the LRB are never impressed, but hey, it's a tradition, guys, and it's only once a year. Don't get cyberbullied by the LRB, Matthew. You're donating money to this show, and your haikus are a beautiful thing, and we welcome them here.
Or just be like me and have a really, really thick skin.
Exactly. I want you to write a haiku about having a thick skin, Andrew.
I will. Jen, I actually have – what was it? I had something where – oh, I know. I have eczema. And one doctor had prescribed some ointment to put on it that had steroids in it. But then doctors since have said, you know what, we don't want to prescribe that anymore because it makes your skin – it'll actually literally thin your skin. And when Genevieve heard that, she had a freaking field day. She's like, get that stuff away from you. You cannot afford to have any thinner skin.
Can you do me a favor, Andrew?
Yes, I can.
My cell phone is dead right now.
Oh, no.
Otherwise, I would boot up the Calm app. Can you get some? Can you like maybe get that app going and play some peaceful music while we read this haiku?
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna not do this peaceful music. I'm not gonna do it through the Calm app for various reasons. It'll be easier if I can just pull something up here on the computer. Let's just see what happens with this.
I want some kind of water rushing and or bamboo flute or both.
How do we feel about this?
A little too spacey.
Okay.
It's a little too off-brand Brian Eno. I mean, I like that music. I would listen to that. But yeah. I feel like this haiku, I mean, the haiku is it Japanese in origin?
I'm looking for like Zen
I believe
zen
we need
stuff.
Something that's a little bit more. Yes, Zen. Exactly.
Well, that was listed as Zen. That was listed as.
Well,
here, this is
you know
better.
What?
This is
Zen's
it.
Dead,
this
baby. Zen's dead.
Okay, there's a show title. I got it. It's perfect.
Oh, yes.
But I only have.
Haiku now. I just want to listen to this.
I only have 2 hours and 34 minutes of this, so I hope it's not too long of a haiku.
I'll go slow. This is listener Matthew's TBTL haiku. TBTL fun. Luke, Andrew, Jen, P. Fletch. Until next year, bye. Wow. I feel like I should be offering the listeners some water that they just emerged from a massage.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like some water?
This is nice.
Your clothes and everything are still located in that room. Just take your time, and we'll settle up when you're all done and ready. If you'd like to go back into the sauna, you're welcome to do that as well.
It'll cost you $400.
You know, we're getting really close to being back in ASMR territory here.
Yes, we are.
Which, can I just tell you, Andrew? Well, let me just say... Let me finish up with listener Matthew's dazzling donor message. By the way, good job, Matthew, on the haiku. Keep them coming, please. I really do think we might need to start playing that music under the show, Andrew. That's the most relaxed I've ever been on the program.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
And Matthew says, one last thing. A big shout out to my 11, Jenny. I pinch myself every day to make sure I'm not dreaming that I get to spend my days with you. Every second we are together is a treat, and every second we are apart seems like an eternity. I love you. Thanks, guys. Power out, Matt. That is the sweetest thing ever. If only Jenny were a real person, Andrew.
I know. That's the sad part.
You know what, though? It's like if it's real in Matthew's mind.
Yeah, why would
that's
you?
That's all that counts.
Exactly. Why the experience is real for Matt. Like, why would we take that
He's
away?
He's in the Matrix.
Sure.
Exactly. And we can see that Jenny is a figment of his imagination, but it's he's taking joy from it. So, Matt and Candy, thank you so much for sponsoring TBTL. We got to get to a break. We got to talk to Hari Kondabalu. We got a whole bunch of stuff to do. I was going to tell you, Andrew, just quickly, that the Dan Lebatard show, my obsession du jour, is obsessed with ASMR. And they decided that there's a basketball analyst who's a former basketball coach named Stan Van Gundy. And Stan Van Gundy is about the most rumpled, like, guy you could ever be. He's portly. He's balding. He's got a questionable mustache. And he is a delight. And they decided he comes on the show once a week to do a basketball segment, but he's always eating. What happened one time is he was drinking a Fresca, and they were mad at him that he was trying to drink this soda. And then the producer was like, no, have him take a drink of that soda into the microphone. And then he did. And then they were like, the producer was like, that's ASMR. Mm-hmm. So this last week, they just had a whole variety of foods they made Stan Van Gundy eat into the microphone to try to reach the ASMR community. This is a national sports talk show, I would like to point out. It's really, really good stuff.
I did start listening to it a bit while I was walking around St. Paul. It was really – and I did enjoy it, but it was very heavy on the basketball talk because of the playoffs were going on. And I just have no points of reference for basketball at all. So it was, I just kind of let it wash over me, and it was fun. I mean, they went on one, I mean, maybe you heard this. The one thing that I was picking up on is while they were talking about the playoffs and going in the ins and outs of whatever the game was the day before, some basketball player is rumored to be leaving LA, I believe. And part of the narrative is that they saw that his mansion is for sale and he's selling his house. And so they keep on like interrupting the basketball talk by getting more details about this house that he's selling until it turns out that they realize that the house actually isn't even his LA house. It's like a vacation house up in Northern California, but that did not stop them from breaking in, getting more and more information about the mansion. So I think I got a little bit of the charm there.
Yeah, it is a good show. I think maybe I forget that I keep saying it's on sports radio, but it's really not about sports. But I mean, it is. Like, it helps if you have a far too much of an obsession with almost all major sports, as I do. Mm-hmm. So even though I don't consider myself an NBA fan, I have a frame of reference if they talk about Kawhi Leonard leaving Toronto or whatever. So I do think that might help a little bit. But for those of you out there who are sport heads, when you're done listening to TBTL, when you've eaten your TBTL, mm-hmm. then you can have your Dan Lebatard. But you need to finish all of your TBTL.
Exactly.
Okay, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back and chat with our Friday friendo, Mr. Hari Kondabalu. So don't go anywhere. I'll be back in a moment with that. Hari Kondabalu, welcome back to TBTL.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Luke, Andrew, the Tens. It's nice to be back.
Good to have you.
I saw a tweet that you put out this week. It said, and I'm just going to read this directly, I'm performing in the basement of a children's restaurant in San Antonio. All the servers are in costumes. A pirate yelled at me, I have a Netflix special. What the hell happened?
Oh, brother. It's the comedy life I live. I mean, I was psyched about going to San Antonio. There's a comedy club I'd never heard of called the Blind Tiger Comedy Club. And it's like a collective put together by comics in San Antonio. So I'm like, all right, especially with supporting the local scene, I'll absolutely do it. So I get there, and we circle the block twice because I'm like, I can't see the name of the club anywhere. All I see is some kind of weird restaurant called Magic Time I've never heard of. So I'm like, all right, there must be a mistake. And then I Googled it, and I realized, oh, my God, I think it's in this restaurant called Magic Time. But what is Magic Time about? So we entered Magic Time, and it's a children's restaurant where all the servers are dressed as different characters. there's pirates and princesses, and for some reason, Ace Ventura. Like, that was 25 years ago. Do kids know Ace Ventura? Yeah,
that children's classic, Ace Ventura. Isn't there also, like, a school bus in there or something?
I wish I had more time to inspect the restaurant more closely. I was too busy pretending I wasn't there.
So, like, what goes through your mind? Because, like, you've done a lot of really high-profile things in comedy, and your career is a real success story. You get free coffee in Brooklyn. More on that coming up. But, like, what goes through your mind when you show up at something and you realize, like, okay, this is what's actually happening. I'm Hari Kondabolu, Netflix special documentarian, all-around famous comedian, and I'm about to go in a basement of a restaurant.
First thought I had is, what happened? And that's a broad what happened. You know, it's just, what happened? How is this happening? And then it's, I made this choice. It was me. This is happening because of me. I made this choice. And then I'm thinking about the tweet I'm going to write. Well, at least I'll get a tweet out of this. And then while that's happening, while all those things are entering my head, they put me in a little cubby, like a booth where the kids either have food or they have face painting and stuff. So I have my own little cubby. And then this pirate shows up. I think he assumed that we were going to eat there, even though there were no children with us. We were adults that were planning to eat at this children's restaurant, me and my opener, Liz Mealy. And all of a sudden, he starts talking all this, I don't know, is it appropriate to call it jive pirate talk?
I think so. Well, what race was the pirate?
He was white. He was white.
Yeah, I think you can say anything you want.
He called me a scallywag. And
oh, no, so he's in character.
Oh, Luke, he was in character. He had an accent from, I don't even know which European country. It was kind of an amalgam of multiple European countries. And then he called me a scallywag. And I said, sir, so we're performing downstairs. We're comedians performing in the basement of this children's restaurant. And he's like, oh, but he never broke character.
Good.
He continued. Was like, oh, it was a misunderstanding, maybe. like you're still in character. Like, I adult to adult. What are you doing? Like, I just told you, I too am a performer. It's like he would not break. He would not break.
Yar, I will consult my manager, Diane.
Arr, there's no need to tip. It's all included. I actually respect the fact that this guy didn't break character. I mean, on, from a professional standpoint, don't you kind of give him credit?
I probably should. I probably should give him credit. But the whole spectacle, I mean, it would be kind of funny if it was Ace Ventura. I kind of wished it was Ace Ventura. Like,
oh my
actually,
God.
We're performing in the basement. We're comics. Well, all righty then. Like, that would have been almost scripted. Perfect.
Out of curiosity, and I have to ask these questions just as a journalist. Is there a chance that he wasn't in character, that he was just a pirate?
I'm sure I would like to think there's more security screening at the Magic Time restaurant, that they make sure that the adults in costume indeed work for them.
Uh-huh.
That seems super important, considering that there's a bunch of children who are in there trusting costumed adults.
No, that's fair.
Is it possible? I'm sure it is possible. I'm sure people are in costume and they're like, Greg looks different today. Like, it's very possible that a real pirate slipped in. But I don't think he was a real pilot. I don't think he was a real pirate. He might have been a pilot, and this might have been a part-time job. No, I'm pretty sure that real pirates don't use plastic swords.
Was that the pirate that I saw a picture of that you took with on Twitter or something?
Yes. And in character, I asked him for a picture. I guess I asked him in character as Hari Kundabolu, human being.
Right.
And he responded in character as a pirate, and said, something to the effect of, "Would you like just a picture of me alone or with you, matey?" And I'm like, "With me, please. I would like a picture with me.
Yar,
in it.
Do ye in your last prefer landscape?"
"Yes, I will take a picture with your demon box."
Right. Somebody must have just had like a really – I mean, that must just be day one of the training for this place that's like never break character. Like I've heard that about the people that work at Disneyland too. They just right. are, you know, like you can never – because you will – it's like the innocence of a child will be destroyed if you ever just go like – if you basically give them the actually, speaking of Jim Carrey from the cable guy – the performance, what's her name? I'll Jeanine be your serving wench,
Jeanine Garofalo. Yeah.
if you give that treatment, it will kind of ruin it for the kids. So I guess these people are like highly in character. So then Hari, when you like go to the basement, what's the scene? Like is like how many people does it hold? Is there a decent crowd? Like what's the vibe down there?
It's, you know, it's what I thought it was. It looks like it's a basement. So, you know, it fit the specs of a comedy club. It had 60 seats, which is what I was told. Nice little stage. I mean, the comedy club was as good, if not better, than I expected, and it was a really fun show. And the comics of San Antonio do a fine job running that club. So, you know, that's all. The comedy part was fantastic. It was a great show. I do think that it might be useful to mention that it's in the basement of a children's restaurant. I mean, it might have scared me away. It might have wanted me, you know, maybe it would have made me want to do two shows. But it was important that I knew ahead of time, I think, just to brace for the immediate feelings of guilt of I have a degree, multiple degrees.
Yes.
I've worked so hard. Why am I here? I have a feeling the head coach of the San Antonio Spurs, Greg Popovich, will not be here. All sorts of thoughts.
It's not completely unlike the time I booked Jeff Garland to be on TBTL, but this would have been almost 10 years ago before everybody was doing a podcast out of their house. And I was emailing from my official radio station email account, and I didn't totally mention to the coordinator, to, you know, his manager or whatever, that he was actually showing up to somebody's house on a residential street. And
oh my God.
He wasn't, I mean, he warmed up very quickly, but I think he said he just almost walked away before even knocking on the door when he realized.
Yeah. Hari, it was my old house in Seattle, which you've been to as well. There was like 80,000 steps to get up, and it was just like, he had the Uber was like idling in front. Like he was like, "I may need to leave at any moment. Like, don't leave. I want you to stay until I know what this deal is." And it was, we've talked about it on the show so many times because he really was, I think he was pretty hardcore confused for the first 5 to 10 minutes of the interview.
And I wasn't sure.
And he got into it.
Yeah. And it's exactly like what you're saying though. Like I didn't want them to know in advance because they might say, wait, no, we're not sending him to somebody's house to do an imaginary radio show. Yet I think he was also sort of turned off that he didn't know in advance that he was showing up to somebody's house to do an imaginary radio show.
I mean, the circling the block, I think, is an important detail of my story. Just the sheer disbelief that it could not possibly be in that restaurant. Seeing like there's a school bus full of children entering currently. That couldn't be the same place. Oh, brother.
What is like the ideal venue for you at this point, Hari?
One that's run by adults and for adults. I think that's
where the term ball pit never enters the conversation.
Give me a sense of pirate to non-pirate ratio that you like.
I like no pirates, uh-huh. And I know that's a bigoted on my part, and you would expect better from me. But, yeah, I'm not and I played Captain Hook. I played Captain Hook in the fifth grade play Peter Pan, our fifth grade version of Peter Pan. So, you know, I realize that sounds like saying, like, yeah, but I'm dating
yes.
You know, a white person.
Some of
know?
My best friends are pirates.
Right, all my best friends are pirates. But, yeah, you know, I can relate to pirates and people dressing up as pirates, and I just don't want that. I don't want that lifestyle at my shows.
So, do you like, because I think the sense I get is that you're, well, we know that sometimes you now, even currently, maybe mostly to kind of tip the cap to the local comedy community, you'll play a place as small as the basement of a children's restaurant, but then also you play big places too. Do you like playing a place that has 1,000 people in it versus a place that has 100 people? Does it change kind of like how you do what you're doing on stage?
Very different dynamics. Extremely different dynamics. I feel like when you're playing a small venue, it's intimate. If it's a fun show, you feel really connected to people. It's a, you know, you're improvising, you're using the space more. It's a completely different feel. When you're doing a bigger venue, there's some degree of autopilot. You know what I mean? Like, you can improvise, there's moments, but because the intimacy isn't there, you have to wait for their laughter. Even if the joke isn't a huge hit, if you have 1,000 people there and 200 people laugh, that's a pretty good laugh still, you know? So the pacing is different. You know, when I was opening for Chris Rock, I think it was probably last year, I think it was 2 years ago. No, it was like a year and a half ago. I mean, his play, they were stadium, so I could hear my echo. I'm waiting for each laugh, so there's always a pause. Like, it's less fun the bigger it is. I think for me, like, 500 to 1,000 is comfortable, you know, as a peak. You know, if it got bigger, sure, but, like, I don't really want it to in terms of an audience size. Like, I like that. I like those numbers. And 200 and under can be fun, too. Like, I do a 40-seat theater in Seattle to work out new material. You know, if that was my main headlining gig, I would be disappointed if that's what it came down to in Seattle. But to work out new material, I think it's great. So it varies, but it's definitely a different muscle.
I don't think I even knew that you had opened for Chris Rock. That's like, that's crazy. How did that come about?
Chris was the executive producer of Totally Biased, which was the show that I used to be on.
Of course.
W. Kamau Bell's old show. And you know, he was going on a tour in Europe before he recorded his Tambourine Netflix special. So it was me, Michelle Wolf, and Jeff Ross all opening for him in 7 cities in Europe. And we were on a private jet and the whole thing. I mean, it was incredible. Whoa. You know, it was a really incredible experience.
But for you, I mean, you're saying that, like, obviously, the more people that come to the shows, the message received by the performer is like, this is resonating with a lot of people, which is a good feeling. But there's a kind of ceiling to that of where it feels like you're able to perform your comedy the best.
Like, with the bigger the venue, the more you lose subtlety. You know, that's why there's the idea of like rock bands that are like, they only do anthems. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's some like bands that, like, you know, if it's U2 and it's a big stadium and everyone knows the words and these are big songs, that's going to work. But like something subtle and that's, as a joke, something subtle, a facial expression, a little movement, that all gets lost.
Well, what about TV? This is really interesting. So now compare that to TV, because I would feel like you could be really subtle because the camera's close in and you can kind of play to the camera a little bit more.
Yes, absolutely. So like, if it's like a late show, like a late night set, you're supposed to play to a little bit of both. Like, you want to get the audience in the room to laugh because you want to get the laughs, obviously. But on punchlines, you might look into the camera as almost a wink to the audience, make sure you sell it to them. You know, you don't want to be too aware because you're going to lose the audience in the room, but you don't want to pretend there's no audience at home because then you're going to lose them. So it's kind of a tricky setup. It was always a bit difficult to play Conan, because they changed their setup, but they used to have the stand up in a certain spot on their stage where a third of the audience is right in front of you and the other 2/3 are to your right. So you'd have to remember to play to the right a little bit more. Otherwise you're going to lose most of the audience. And the instinct is to play, you know, up the middle, right? But the idea that you're to the left would throw you off a little bit. And now they moved it more to the center. So it's like you're doing a regular show and you don't have to do additional, like, the math of comedy. Like, okay, how do I play, get this joke to work? And what are the opportunities I have to move my head to the side to make sure that I don't lose them? Can I play some punchlines there? You know, with the Netflix special, on the other hand, like, you know, we're controlling the angles. you know, we're controlling the where the cameras are set up. And, you know, Bobcat Goldthwait directed mine, so Bobcat obviously knows what it's going to be like. He saw the special. He had a sense of this is a good moment for a close-up. Like, he saw the act before we recorded. So he's like, oh, this would be a close-up. He's going to move here. We want cameras here and here for that. And, you know, I think you get to control it a bit more. And the subtlety, I mean, it's great. Like, you can pretty much do anything. And every little movement is, you know, accentuated because you have a close-up.
That's you actually got to the next thing I wanted to ask you about, which is recording one of these Netflix specials. Because I actually didn't know Bobcat directed yours, and I guess I've never fully understood what the director of a comedy special does. But they basically watch the material. They're aware of the material, and they're just trying to figure out where the camera moves are and things like that.
Yeah, like what shots do we absolutely need to get? They also help, depending on, you know, the director. But, you know, with Bobcat, we talked about set design together. We talked about venue. We talked about, you know, how much space I wanted to use, where I was going to wear, like all sorts of stuff. Because that all factors in with lighting and the rest of it. Directors often pick out their crew, not everybody, but, you know, that they know who's good at what and what will work. With Bobcat, I had the advantage of also having someone who's been on the other side of the camera. Someone who's had HBO specials, someone who knows how to work a room, who understands the dynamics of a stand-up show, that knows what they like and don't like about stand-up specials. Like, one of the biggest things that we discussed is both of us hate audience shots. Like, it's not about it's cheap, you know? It's like, hey, the audience there is laughing. Hey, there's a joke about Asian people. There's an Asian guy in the audience laughing. Like, it's manipulative. It's unnecessary. And with me and Bobcat, it was great because we both agreed, like, focuses on the performer. If you have to go to the audience, it's either because it's relevant, there's something happening in the audience, or because there is no other edit to cover up a mistake.
Are you, when you're doing a special, like your Netflix special, are you able to be present and in the flow and in the moment of the comedy you're doing the way you might be, let's say, in the basement of a children's restaurant? or are you just like so aware of the camera angles and like you're like, this is my special? And obviously, I think you probably record a couple, and then you maybe at least a lot of comics will record a couple nights and kind of splice it together. But like, is it a really stressful thing where it's really the least enjoyable comedy to do because you're trying to get it just right?
The least enjoyable comedy to do is on late night sets. Because it's 5 minutes at the end of a show that has nothing to do about you. Like, it has nothing to do with you. You're not a famous person compared to the celebrities they have. Conan's the one who makes all the jokes. And Andy, for example, if it's Conan, and then all of a sudden you show up. And that's always really difficult. With a stand-up special, it's your show. You're the whole act. I mean, I think that changes the dynamic. So in that regard, like, the stress is different. It's still enjoyable. It's still an hour of stand-up comedy. The key thing is not to overthink, you know, and that's certainly something I've done in the past on albums. You know, you just got to be in the moment, see if there's an improvised moment, take it. Like, take it, because that's going to make the whole thing look better. And the best thing is, like, look, if it doesn't work out, if something gets fucked up, you either cut it out or you retape it. Like, this isn't, to me, this is my philosophy on it, is this is not supposed to be an accurate document of the night. It's supposed to be an accurate document of your act and of what you're doing. So I don't mind editing. I don't mind, you know, reshooting something or fixing a mistake. Like, it's a program. It's a television program. And, you know, it's not supposed, to me, it's not supposed to be like, this is exactly what it feels like at a comedy show. No, it doesn't feel like that all the time. Every show feels different. So the pressure for me, like, certainly I wore it. I over-rehearsed, I feel like. I did too many warm-up shows. So when I did the Netflix special, part of me felt a little too tight. Like, I was loose and performing the material, but it was so, like, there was very little room for improvisation or being in the moment. And there was a couple of moments for it, and I'm really happy with those moments because, like, oh, that's just me. That's just me being there.
That's relatable to us. So many times Luke and I will talk to ourselves, talk to each other about the show, and just like, we're too tight on TBTL. We're just like, we're nailing it too much.
Yeah, way too tight. The script is too planned.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I was going to ask you, how many different performances or takes did you end up doing that ended up in the final show?
We did two. The only retakes we did, luckily, was just the final exit and the entrance. Which I was happy about, because I really... Yeah, I didn't want to do any retakes of jokes or, you know what I mean? Because as much as you can do it, it doesn't feel good. Like, you don't want to...
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel good. So luckily there was nothing that could... The performance is accurate in terms of, like, this is actually the way it played out. But we had to do the beginning and the end multiple times, also just to get it clean and to make sure... You know, I came out to different music depending on what we would get rights to later. So,
that was
part of it. Yeah,
that's really interesting, because I always assumed that it was like you would at least do two full performances of the entire set. Let's say an early show and a night show.
That happened.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that did happen. What I meant retakes. I meant like do this one joke over because you flubbed it, or you got the wording wrong, or you missed the punchline, and get the audience to sweeten it and like. No, we didn't do any of that.
Okay.
But we did two full shows. I think it's best both for albums and for specials to do two. I think some people do multiple days. I just think there's too many variables on multiple days.
Mm.
Like the mic could be slightly in a different place. Your hair looks slightly different. You know, the clothes, like you were sweating a certain way and now you're not. Mm-hmm. Like you have sweat in this one and now you don't have sweat in that one. And there's like... There's too many things that could go wrong. And your delivery also. Like, you hit a groove when you're performing, and all of a sudden you're delivering jokes a certain way, and the next day you might be delivering it slightly different. You know, your tone's slightly different. The words are the same, but those are subtleties that over a course of 24 hours, like, they change. And so I think, like, getting two in a day close to each other is probably the best way to do it.
Did you do that thing where they came out and had to like kind of towel you off halfway through, or like fix your makeup or anything in front of the entire audience?
No, none of that happened. Thank God. The one thing that did happen that was really fun was when we were doing some of the retakes, you know, of me walking out on stage and all that stuff that I was telling you about before. Either the battery died or. Something like that. I think they ran out of batteries, so they had to change the battery. So we had to stall for time. So Bobcat went on stage, and we were riffing together.
Oh.
And this is during the second taping, and he was telling jokes and stories, and it was really fun, like to have that moment with him. And I'm not sure if the audience knew the director was Bobcat until that moment. So the people who really are comedy fans are like, "Holy shit, Bobcat Goldthwait!" So that kind of just that was a really fun. Like, you had to be there type moment.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's kind of funny you mention him, Hari, because I just did Wait, Don't Tell Me like a week or two ago with him. And I've done it with him one other time. And it's funny because you know him better than I do, but he's just like a really sweet, kind of just mellow, pretty unassuming guy, kind of when you're chilling backstage. And it's easy to forget that he was like, you know, like probably at one point one of the five most popular comedy characters in America. Like, it was insane how popular he was. And it's funny because I do Wait all the time. I feel like I'm a moderately funny person who has really learned how to operate within the system of Wait, Don't Tell Me. So I think of myself as being pretty good at that show just because I do it a lot. And Bobcat's this person who doesn't do it a lot. And I remember there was this moment where he was talking, he was being kind of mellow and quiet. And I was thinking, like, I was like almost worried for him. Like, oh, I don't know if he knows what he's doing. And then he just like, within like 1 second had the audience eating out of his hand, had like all of the funniest lines of the night, just totally destroyed it. And I was like, I can't believe I was worried that Bobcat Goldthwait wasn't going to be able to like operate in front of this crowd of people. Like what an idiot I am.
I mean, his instincts are so sharp, and certainly, you know, he has, in a lot of ways, he has a wider palette to use. Cause when he was doing the character like that he used to do, like, it was how much can you do with that, you know? And now it's like he can be himself, which is great. Like he has a broader, like he just has more movement and comedically he just can do more things. And it's funny, like, you know, you were saying he was one of the most famous comics in the world. I mean, he was opening for Nirvana during their peak. I mean,
oh, man.
Wow. That's absurd. You know, that's absurd. He told me a story about how, like, he would regularly bomb at those shows. Like, it never went well. And the only person he would hear laughing is Kurt, no. who wanted him to open. So it would just be Kurt laughing at him bombing. And how, like, this is amazing to me.
Oh, man.
I mean, doing comedy before a Nirvana show would be the kind of thing you could never turn down as an opportunity, but it would be.
Right, right.
Honestly, you want to talk about the least ideal comedy scenario? That might be right up there on the list.
Yeah, the idea of, like, you're trying to bring mirth before a grunge band. Yeah, that's a. Hey, let's be happy before we get angry and tearful.
Have you ever opened up for a music act?
Yes. I opened up for the Julie Ruin, which is Kathleen Hanna's band. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
Kathleen's a friend, and she asked me to do it, so I said yes. And she, the first few minutes, I'm like, oh no. Kathleen came out to introduce me and everything, so I'm like, that could help. And they were just staring at me like, why? I came to see a band with mostly women sing incredible songs, and there is a man, an adult man on stage talking to me about stuff. That is not what I paid for. And I think after a few minutes, they got like, okay, like Kathleen picked him out, and he's talking about stuff that I would enjoy as a fan of Kathleen Hanna. You know, if you're like into, like if you're a feminist and you're, a Bikini Kill fan and, you know, love Riot Girl, like I'm going to be in that world broadly, like in terms of the politics because of what I talk about. So I got them, but it was still work. And that's as close as you can get in terms of fan bases, I would imagine. Right. I can't even imagine, like Yola Tengo asked me to open once.
Oh.
And I missed the email. I don't know how the fuck I missed the email, but I missed the email. And I saw it later. I'm like, I can't believe it. And I wrote back and apologized. I can't believe I couldn't do this. But part of me is like, I wonder how that would have went.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Yeah. That sounds – well, for me, it's like I view the world often through like this question of like on TBTL of late, we've been talking about famous people that I think wouldn't like me. Like I think Moby wouldn't like me. Like just famous people who I've never met really or haven't spent much time with, but my gut – and so then I sort of – I try to get ahead of that by almost like not liking them because I assume they wouldn't like me because I'm so needy or whatever. And I feel the Yola Tengo fan base would be sitting with their arms crossed like as I was just flailing on stage trying – because I love the music of Yola Tengo, but it's very arch. It's very hip in this way, or it's very – it's for people who I think would find me to be a little thirsty.
I mean, Todd Barry, I know, is friends with them and has opened a bunch, and that makes sense to me. Because if you have a bunch of people with their arms folded, you're essentially dealing with a comic who has his arms folded.
Yeah,
like, it is like a perfect match. I mean, I think it also depends on how famous the comic is relative to the band. Like, I was doing this event at the Paramount, which I can't believe I'm blanking on what it is. I think it was their anniversary show a couple of years ago. And so I was performing, I was hosting, and I was doing stand-up between bands, right? And I was nervous about it. But it was going great, like, the whole way through. And then I had to bring out Death Cab, who was closing, Death Cab for Cutie. And that's when I realized, oh, this is a barrier now. Like, everybody else, they were fine. But now this is, like, the first thing on the stage that is more famous than I am. This is going to be – and then they were not – like, we've had enough. You were funny. Okay, let's get Ben on. So I think that has a factor, too.
Yeah, you were like, and now the part of my set called I Will Possess Your Laughs, where I very quietly and earnestly make jokes that really have you thinking about college girlfriends. And I don't say that to be dismissive of Ben's work. We love Ben. He's a friend of the show. But,
no, he's great.
Yeah. Hey, I know you got to go, Hari. What's that? Yeah, he has, actually.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. He's been – actually, what happened was – his sister runs a really cool organization called Teen Feed, and I believe that there was – I think I did something with Teen Feed, And then I asked him to come on the show right after I did that. And I think he was like, I can't really say no in good conscience. And so I was able to basically leverage like the one altruistic thing I've ever done in my life to force Ben to come on our show.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you, Harry.
That's how you do it, Luke. That's how you got
to
do it.
I remember, Luke, when you and I were first hanging out. This is, you know, years ago. And I was hanging out with my friend Rainey. We had gone to like a football game or something. And then we were trying to figure out, hey, should we get a drink? Should we wrap up? And then I got a text message from you that was like, hey, do you want to go play whirly ball with Ben Gibbard? And that was literally the coolest I've ever felt in my life. I was able to say to Rainey, "Rainey, I'm gonna have to give you a rain check, as it were, on the drink because I'm gonna go play whirly ball with Ben Gibbard." We haven't stayed in touch though, me and Ben.
That's his favorite sport. He's obsessed with. Do you know this, Hari?
What is whirly ball?
You lived in Seattle, but I guess you probably never made your way up like far enough up Aurora Avenue to like. I don't even know where we'd be anymore, like south
Edmonds.
Of Everett on Aurora Avenue.
I'm pretty sure
there
it's
is this. I guess, yeah, it's technically Edmonds, Washington. It is this bizarro game. They also have it in Chicago, and really, I can't recommend it highly enough. You drive go-karts, bumper cars, and so it's you have a team of like three other players or whatever. You drive bumper cars. You're going against a different team. You are throwing a ball around that you're catching with one of those big kind of like almost like a high lie sort of device, but it's like smaller in plastic. But you're throwing a ball back and forth with your team, and you're trying to make your way down the court to throw the ball through. Like imagine a basketball backboard, but it doesn't have a rim. It just has a hole in the middle, and you're trying to throw the ball through. And I know this sounds very complicated, and it kind of is, but it is so fun. And I found out this particular night that Gibbard is like – is first of all really good at it, which is kind of like, come on, dude, can you leave one thing for the rest of us? But loves whirly ball. And anyway, they have one in Edmonds and they have one in Chicago because I've seen it from the freeway going into town. And if you ever see it, if you're on the road, Hari, you got to go try it. It's really fun.
It is a blast.
Imagine if Ben Gibbard was so good at whirly ball that he was in the Whirly Ball Hall of Fame. And people like didn't know he played music because they're whirly ball people. They're just like, Ben Gibbard, the whirly ball.
I'm name dropping Ben Gibbard, and like, oh yeah, the whirly ball champion.
Yeah,
hey, Hari, before we let you go, we need to check in on one of the things you're most known for on our show, which is the fact that you do have Coffee for Life at a cafe in Brooklyn. But also they have recently changed out some of the staff, and so it's a little awkward trying to make use of your lifetime free coffee thing. Where's that stand currently?
I still get free coffee at the venue. At the coffee shop, I still get free coffee there. It's Dub Pies in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah.
It is great coffee. I'm pretty much – every time there's a new staff member, I point to my name on the chalkboard that is next to them. Say, that is me. You see that infinity symbol? That means I get coffee forever. And they trust that, and there we go.
Do you have to take a very careful tone, though? Because, I mean, I'm with you. I want the free coffee, but you also don't want to be like, you see that name on the board? You see the infinity? That's me. Give me my coffee.
You have more dignity than I have, sir. I point at the name, like, hey, do you know? One time it was funny, like, somebody knew was going to charge me, and someone else was like, no, he doesn't pay. And it was kind of embarrassing, but also really like, oh, yeah. It's a great comment.
Yeah,
that's pies. And
feels kind of good,
also have,
that, you know.
They also have pies. If you're into New Zealand-style pies, they got that there.
Okay. Well, listen, Hari, you're going to be in Bloomington, Indiana this weekend, right, at the Comedy Attic?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
It will
and
be
then,
fun.
Where can people go to get tickets?
They can go to the Comedy Attic's webpage or my webpage at HariKundabolu.com. So the Comedy Attic webpage. I think it's probably best. Also, can I tell you where else I'm performing also because
yes.
I want you to hear the names of the comedy clubs.
I live for this.
Pirate's Booty in Indiana.
It's not that far away from these names. So Comedy Attic, that's a good name.
Then there's Wise Guys in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
May 17th to 18th. Then the Comedy Works in Denver,
decent.
May 23rd to the 25th. That's pretty. It's pretty good. Then it's a good club, decent name. Then Arlington, Virginia, at the Arlington Draft House.
That's a good spot.
June 14th and 15th. It's a very good spot. And here is the crown jewel. June 27th to 30th in Sunnyvale, California, I am performing at the Rooster T. Feathers Comedy Club.
Nice.
Rooster T. Feathers in Sunnyvale, California, June 27th to 30th.
When I think of the work of one Hari Kondabolu, I just think that is Rooster T. Feathers material.
Yeah. I mean, I really hope I don't die that weekend, because the last fucking thing I want in my obituary, he was performing at the Rooster T. Feathers Comedy Club.
I mean, come on. Doesn't a part of you want that to be your legacy, though? Just a little part?
Oh, not even that my ego is too big
right.
to let that happen.
Comedian Hari Kondabolu was found dead at Rooster T. Feathers. He had come directly from the basement of a children's restaurant where he had also been performing that night. We were told things were not going very well for him. Well, listen, Hari, thanks for checking in with us, and good luck on tour. And everybody go to just harikondabolu.com to see where Hari's going to be in a city near you. And go check him out. Hari, thanks, man.
Thanks. Good to hear from you both.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right. Before we get out of here, let us do some music for your weekend. By the way, Andrew, I just want to give you huge credit on that. Was it Lee Fields?
Yes. Have you gone back and listened to that on the plane? I found that to be wonderful airplane music.
I listened
music.
To it in Marfa, sitting out on that porch, played it for Addy, and just let it roll. Man, what a great album. And Lee Fields and the Extraordinaires?
In the Expressions, which is another, like, I just love that name, Lee Fields and the Expressions. And I was talking to a friend about it the other day, and he said, he just goes back. I mean, he's been making music since the 60s. And so this is his new album, but, like, we have a lot of exploring. And the fact that, like, it's not another Lee Fields song from me this week is extraordinary, because that's all I've been listening to is that new record.
Such good stuff.
Do you want me to go first on this, by the way?
Yes.
I'm not trying to be pushy. It doesn't matter to me. Today's song is actually, I didn't really do my homework. Like I said, I've only been listening to Lee Fields and Dan Le Batard. So I just saw this literally.
With the Stugats. Lee Fields. With the Stugats.
This literally came into my email box today from a publishing company, a music publishing company. I had not heard of this woman before, but I like the tone of this. So I'm going to share it with you. We can kind of explore it
wait,
together.
Wait, hold on a second. Mm-hmm. So did this somebody send this to you hoping it would get played on a show?
Yeah, I'm on all these mailing lists from back when I was at New Hampshire Public Radio and I started a show there, and one of the plans was to not just do talk but to actually intermix like full track songs. It was a great idea that never saw fruition because people were just scared to mix talk and music. And I think it could have been good if it was done right. But anyway, because of that, I signed up for all kinds of like labels send me music and stuff, and I just never unsubscribed. So sometimes they just pile up.
I just
and
like
I
that
delete
because
them.
I'm happy. I'm happy that somebody had success with this. This is all you can hope for if you're sending out tracks to radio producers and even podcast producers. Is like someone will like it and then they will play it on their show. This is like their plan is working out perfectly.
Yeah, and I feel good doing it too. It feels like it justifies me getting this. It's the people at Pitch Perfect PR sent this to me. It's a lot of P's, dude. You know,
they're the people. Is it Brid? Is the person who sent it to you named Brid?
Not this particular one, but again,
they're
I've
the people that did
years.
The PR for Marfa Myths, where I just was.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So anyway,
they're great. That's a good PR company. Anyway,
so this is going for ads, Luke, as they say in the industry. You get those emails like these are the songs that are going for ads. Like they want radio stations to add them to their playlists. This woman's name is Faye Webster. She has a new album coming out in May. It's called The Atlanta Millionaires Club. This song is called Right Side of My Neck.
Her haircut, but it looks good anyway. I kinda wonder where you got it, and I doubt you even paid. The right side of my neck still smells like you. The right side of my neck still smells like you.
I don't know if you're having an influence on me these days, Luke, or if I'm just... I feel like a lot of the music that I'm attracted to is much more kind of languid, and this just tonally really
good
is...
Good use of languid.
Yeah. Hey, watch your languid. anyway.
Ooh, good show title,
good show
too.
Title. Yeah, I like that. But
Bear Wrestling.
This is only the second time I've heard this song, but I like it.
Yeah, that's really nice. That's really up my alley as well. All right, my... recommendation is from our I know I played this not I played some Telekinesis not that long ago, but our friend Michael of Telekinesis and the whole crew that make up that band have a new album out called Effluxion, and I've been enjoying it a lot. And this is really funny. I got a text from a friend of mine named Lance. Lance is a musician who's been in a number of bands that our listeners have heard. He plays with Sloucher and also plays with Telekinesis. And so he sent me this picture. He said, "Congratulations on your promotion at the Waffle House." And he and the Telekinesis guys had gone into the random Waffle House in Atlanta where I had done that TV shoot, where one of the things they did for me was made me an employee. They have a poster when you walk into the Waffle House. There's a picture of all the employees who've been honored, and they got a picture of me off the internet. It's like one of the least flattering pictures of me of all time, but that's neither here nor there. It's a very sweet gesture. And then they wrote employee since 2019, Luke Burbank. They put it up on the wall, I assume just as a joke, but it's apparently still there.
Oh, I love it. That's great. And the guys from Telekinesis recognized it.
They went in there and they were looked over and there it was. And I can only imagine they must have been like, what the F is going on? Like, we're in a random Atlanta Waffle House and there's a picture of a person that we know who works here now, I guess. This is because I presume they are not big CBS Sunday morning watchers. I think it was surprising to them. Anyway, this song, do you mind playing this, Andrew?
I got it right here. Yep. This is Like Nothing.
This Telekinesis, Like Nothing off of Effluxion.
Of the
There you go.
I like that.
Telekinesis.
You know, I still so good, right? I don't. Yeah, I always say the same thing with them. Like, I haven't like sat down and listened to an album. I know them only through TBTL, and I mean that from before I was a part of TBTL. Every time you play a song by them, I'm like, I love this. This is my new favorite band. It's all I'm going to listen to.
Telekinesis, great, really fascinating story for Michael. You know, he went to, I don't know if you were maybe on the show, Andrew, when we had him on. We always talk about this with him because I find it so mind-blowing. After he graduated from high school, he went to England and he went to like a music school that's Paul McCartney's music school. And when you graduate from this music program, music college, Paul McCartney gives you your diploma, which has got to be pretty freaking rad. But he basically went there to be a sound engineer and he needed to have content to record. And so he started playing these instruments so he could record them, like, and then just got into the playing the instruments part. And so then when he came back, he worked at a studio in Seattle called Chopsticks, and he just put some of these little tracks that he had made, these like 15-second songlets or minute-long songlets, up on the website. And actually, second Death Cab for Cutie reference, I think it was how could his name be escaping me? His mom is a listener to the show, not Ben, but the other guy, Christopher Walla, the other guy that was in Death Cab at the time, heard these tracks and called him up and was like, "These are good. Let's develop these." So anyway,
I had forgotten
kind
that
of a story. Crazy
story. You know what? I think maybe, yeah, either you mentioned that to me, or maybe I was on that show actually, because that story is fascinating and it rings a bell. That's cool.
All right, listen, the listener suggestion is from listener James. Now, if you were enjoying what Andrew was playing, that's good, because this is a little bit of a continuation sonically. Cool. James says, Jenny Lewis released a new album, On the Line, back in March, and I'd like to suggest the song Red Bull and Hennessy. Thank you, and I hope everyone has a fantastic weekend. Now, Andrew, as I was queuing this song up earlier, I was watching the video, and the song's very lovely, but the video is amazing, too. It's got Jason Schwartzman in it. It's got Jeff Goldblum. It's got Tim Heidecker. It's, like, totally fascinating as a video and very good as a song as well.
Does it start clean? I was going to play it from Spotify to avoid any, you know, extra skits or anything at the beginning, but if you previewed it, you think I should play it from the video?
I'd give it a shot. I mean, I think that'll work. I don't know. I feel like I'm not allowed to criticize your music playing anymore because I was totally wrong last week when Nora and I ganged up on you.
Well, I just want to make sure that I'm not accidentally playing the live version.
Come on. Can we once end the week on a positive note? All right. This is going to be the end of our broadcast week. Not a minute too soon. This is listener James's suggestion for music for your weekend. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being part of TBTL, everybody in the TBTL family. We really do appreciate you. And we're going to be back here on Monday with more Imaginary Radio for you. Enjoy your weekend. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.